Hello. So I won't tell you any creepy Halloween stories, but I will say that whenever it's Halloween, I'm reminded that our house was the house that gave out raisins. So you see that I come to my interest in public health with a little bit of, personal conflict, because I'm not entirely sure I believe. But in any case, it's really a pleasure to be here talking about the NIFI program and about the work that Public Health Foundation has been able to do in several states. And you'll notice that several of the other national partners have invited grantees from governmental health agencies to come and talk about the capacity building assistance that they've received. I'm actually here because we couldn't decide which of the grantees we want to highlight, so we're just going to talk about a whole bunch of them at once. Right, so I don't have anything to disclose either. Sorry. We have to do this for a beat or two, is that right? Good. Fine. Okay, so as Carlos mentioned, we are as national partners doing capacity building assistance in a couple different ways. In the case of Public Health Foundation, it takes the form of remote training and assistance. It takes the form of going on site and doing training and facilitation, and then we're also building, developing publications and tools, all of which are to support grantees' efforts in the field. I'm going to zoom through very quickly the first category and then get to some meat on the on-site work that we've been doing. So firstly, remote training and assistance has consisted of some webinars that we've developed, consultations you can see in lots of different states and some large cities, and then email communications that we've been doing back and forth. So lots of different ways in which we're touching grantees. Not all of them, obviously. There are 74 now, but a large number of them. In terms of on-site training and facilitation, we've been doing three different kinds of work. So first, and this is where I'm going to double-click and go down deep in a moment, rapid cycle improvement work. One of the things that we did early on, starting last winter, was to work with three of the state grantees, Minnesota, Maine, and Wisconsin, on trying to bring in some quality improvement initiatives that worked on a rapid cycle. The idea here being Public Health Foundation wanting to bring forth quality improvement. That is our focus as part of the NIFI program, and wanting to do that in a rapid cycle way with some low-hanging fruit in each of these states. I'll get back to each of those in a moment. We're doing on-site quality improvement training. This is the current list of where we've been and where we're going so far, and this is a growing list. The governmental grantees can put in requests for technical assistance that they find that they need, and if that happens to be quality improvement, then that request often will come to us, and we'll talk with them about what they need. Sometimes that requires going on site. And then thirdly, in terms of a regional, national level, we have been doing workshops at the national meetings, the annual meetings for the grantees themselves, so that we can touch lots of grantees at once. We're talking about putting together some regional training intensives in this coming year, and of course there'll be another annual meeting this year. The Modular Kaizen was a book that was developed last year by some of our consultants and folks that work with us, and we, in addition to publishing it, did an hour and a half workshop twice at last March's annual, well, and I guess it was the inaugural NIFI grantee meeting. So Modular Kaizen, Kaizen being Japanese for improvement. So the idea being that you're doing improvement in small doses, but in this case, the book was about dealing with disruption. So a disruptive environment, none of us with these economic times have any of those going on, but when you do, you have disruption and you have to somehow find a way to make improvement happen. So I want to talk now about the rapid cycle interventions. We start with Minnesota. And for those of you who aren't familiar with quality improvement and the frameworks that Public Health Foundation uses, which aren't unique to us. Typically, an improvement cycle would begin with an aim statement that's crafted by the organization, in this case, a health department, that's trying to make the improvement happen. They spent a good part of their first session forming their aim statement. So by April 2013, that would have been 2 years forward, the Minnesota Department of Health Office of Performance Improvement will improve the completeness, validity, and utility of PPMRS data for Minnesota Department of Health and local public health by 30%, which is a really what they were trying to say is we want to improve the quality of our reporting system and the data we're getting out of it so that we can do more with it and believe in it more. There was three on-site sessions that were spaced about a month apart, and this was the rapid piece. So they're going to do homework in between. We're going to come back and help at key points. They used flowcharts, brainstorming, affinity diagrams. The state and local offices identified goals and established this two-year timeline. They had 16 recommendations and established quarterly tracking. I'm acknowledging the folks at the bottom, Kim McCoy, Alex Ripley, Jack Moran, from our team, who worked on this project, but obviously there were a lot more people involved at the ground level. The progression went from forming two teams, first the state and the local. They independently mapped the reporting process, and this was important because they came up with very different maps, even though they were using the same system. And so this was surfaced a moment where folks had to learn from each other about what was really happening versus what was theoretically happening. Developing consistent data definitions, recommendations for when updates were to happen and so forth, recommending how the system would link to accreditation standards and measures. So very focused on accreditation, as are many organizations, and trying to figure out how to leverage this system in that area. Reporting back on progress made since the first session. On the third session, so this is session three, going back to that aim statement and figuring out where are we and where are we headed. They chose five different metrics. I won't read them to you, but they were very focused on choosing metrics that were going to be meaningful for them, that were going to be concrete, and that they could continue to use on a regular basis. Very important not to have sort of Bibles full of data that nobody can use. So wanting to be very specific and very clear. Now I'm going to take you to Maine. I know this is the fast lane. In Maine, and we're very fortunate to have, by the way, Bryn Riley is in our audience. She's sitting right over there. She's one of the names down at the bottom. The aim statement in Maine was to increase the number of referrals for newborns at risk. So what they were finding is in Family Health Newborn Screening Program, they were not seeing newborns who were premature newborns getting referred into early intervention or diagnostic services so that they could get rooted into services that they might be at risk for needing. There were, again, a series of three on-site sessions. They used process flow and root cause analysis and launched a process for making and tracking referrals for preterm newborns who may need developmental services. They unified this process for the three NICUs in the state. This is now going an ongoing monitoring to track what's going on. What's important here is that they weren't tracking at all before. So while there may have been referrals, the official rate was zero. And they're now able to track what those referrals are, and they're now able to claim that, in fact, they're going to be making increasingly more referrals into these early intervention programs. So the first session was a review of legislative requirements and the ownership. What are we supposed to be doing here? They mapped out their current process, what their roles were, assessing the quality of what they were executing on, and then finding the root causes for execution failures. They updated the flow chart then in the second session to account for local differences, right, because different areas might be handling it slightly differently, might have different needs, assigning tasks for the process improvement, and then in the third session, modifying, tweaking the process, and the forms and procedures, establishing a test schedule for the reporting system. And that is an ongoing process. And I'm going to take you now to Wisconsin. More complicated story in Wisconsin. And it reminds me a little bit of what Magda said at the beginning about needing to be nimble, needing to be flexible. We went in thinking we were going to do rapid cycle improvement in Wisconsin. That was what CDC suggested we do. And sure enough, when we got there, it looked like it was going to work. They wanted to reduce the number of days from receipt of notice of grant awards to completion of the purchase order for the first payment that would go out to the local health organization. So what they wanted to do was get the money out to the locals faster. The state was getting, and then it was kind of getting bottlenecked. And so the local health organizations weren't getting the money to do what they needed to do. So this is what they wanted to do, was improve their contracting process and efficiency. It's a business process that they wanted to improve. It had very little, actually, to do with health outcomes, except that, of course, it did in a very dramatic way at the local level because they couldn't do their work. So the focus was on contract processing improvement. They did process mapping, root cause analysis. They launched an agency-wide finance 101 where they actually decided they had to teach everybody finance because that was part of the problem. They simplified the policy and procedures manual. They made it online. And then what ended up happening was because there needed to be so much more consultation on an ongoing basis, what we did, instead of doing the 3 visits spaced across 3 months, is we actually had some folks that were local that worked with them on a much more ongoing basis. That really was more appropriate in the Wisconsin case. There was no way to tell that in advance, but it was really important to be flexible and make that happen. I'm thanking the folks again from the Wisconsin. I think I didn't change it to Wisconsin at the bottom, but it should have been Wisconsin RCI leaders. And this quickly goes through the 5 meetings that they did rather than 3, and where they are, which is that they have made some improvements, but this is an ongoing process for them. Not sure why that's there, so I'm going to skip it. So I mentioned a couple things already. We didn't want to make any assumptions that we knew our customer. We know some things about quality improvement and performance management, but every situation was really unique, and we needed to start with them where they were with the problem that they had. It is very interesting. Again, Magna talked about being issue-driven, being place-based, and you know that really is where we begin. So we can't walk into a health department and say, you know, really, it's about tobacco. You've got to address tobacco. You know, it's lead in the drinking water for them. That's what it is, and that's the problem you have to solve for them. And if you want to solve something else, they're not going to be on board. So very important to understand the context. We spend a lot of time up front understanding with each health department what it is that's getting in their way, what they're trying to accomplish, and then how we can use QI to start getting them there. Seeking and incorporating input from outside the immediate team. So this is a kind of a chronic problem where you have the same people around the table and they keep sort of coming up with the same good ideas, but they don't see where those ideas are going to break down. When you mix that up a little bit, you suddenly get a very different perspective. Needing to have a change leaders team and the team actually needing to do real work. So not figureheads, but people who are rolling up their sleeves and who have the endorsement and support of the senior leadership. Accounting for staff turnover. So in Wisconsin, one of the barriers was that there was a 60% turnover in the health department. And so that was part of the reason that people didn't know what to do with these contracts, because nobody was getting trained. It was just too fast, the turnover. So it was a system that was a problem, but also was a risk factor. And then the need to write down policies and procedures. I'm getting the flag, so I'm not going to say too much more about our tools and publications, except that this is just a short list of some of the things that we're going to be developing this year. So I've spent most of my time talking about the technical assistance that we've done in response to the needs expressed by the grantees, but we also have access to, thanks to CDC and to the data collection that's been going on through the National Network of Public Health Institutes, a lot of upfront data about what these grantees need and what they're looking for. And from that, we're doing a lot of proactive development of tools. This is a short list of some of the things that we're going to be working on across the next 9 to 12 months. I think that's it. Make sure I didn't skip anything. Nope. Any quick questions?